Good morning. Oh my goodness.
What a time to be up so early. Is this early for you? It's early for me.
Oh, goodness.
It's 8:25. I guess I should be up by this time anyway, right? Should be an R, two different things. All right. Hey, you are the first people to see this presentation. And I was working on it until almost 1 o'clock this morning, so it's kind of my first time, too. Yes, I've seen every slide, I just have never seen them in order. And honestly, I don't know if this is a 37-minute presentation, or an 18-minute presentation, or a 1 hour and 62-minute presentation. That'd be an hour, 2 hours, 2 minutes. I just don't know. So we're gonna give it a try and see how we go. How many of you were here last year? What was it, September last year? Yeah. So you might remember last year we had a bunch of equipment we brought out here and we were demonstrating containerized software in local computers. And Cam Eicher was here with me, and thank goodness, because without his help I couldn't have got it all done. And man, I had a truckload of stuff to haul back to Tennessee. This time I flew, so I didn't bring any computers. Most of the computers we're going to be showing, the results of them, are in a cloud as in somewhere. Now, I really want to point out that, you know, we talk about cloudifying this and that, and at the moment, most people who are implementing these technologies aren't putting them at AWS or Google Cloud or Microsoft Azure. Most people are putting it on-premises. So you're going to hear us talking about cloud, and some things are. We certainly can. And some are on-premises. So you know, have some flexibility there. All right. Also, you're going to see a lot of references to Container University. Is that what it says there? Container University? Okay. The presentation I'm getting, like I said, you're the guinea pigs. This is my first time. And hopefully what I learn and feedback I get from how bad this presentation is, I will make it better. And it's going to be about the seventh or eighth part of our continuing series at Telos Alliance about Container University. So we've covered a lot of individual topics. This is the wrap-up, and it shows systems actually in use or gives you some demonstrations. All right. So software containers are already the industry standard for performing microservices efficiently and reliably, and this tech is widely adopted in the online services industry. For example, if you send me some money with PayPal, or I send you some money with Venmo, you're using containerized software. Little things that perform little functions. So we're here for what we're calling Container University 301, hands-on with your virtual studio processing, talk show, and intercom. We share a common goal of staying on the air, and now we have cost-effective failover and disaster recovery strategies available in this form of virtualized broadcast infrastructure. And these strategies can be cross-functional. In other words, if you build something to help you with like more channels during a basketball season or hockey season, football season, then you can use this as disaster recovery. So you build it for one thing and you get more functionality. How many of you are broadcast engineers in the room? I would imagine that's just about everybody. And how many of you are also the go-to IT person? So you kind of got two minds. Well, by the way, for you who have to do both jobs, we have arranged for counseling just down the hall after the meeting. Here's a name that you never heard before, probably. Catherine Booth. Catherine Booth was born almost 200 years ago. She and her husband co-founded the international charity, the Salvation Army, which lives on today to relieve human suffering without discrimination. Booth's words are meaningful even today, and I really like this quote, "If we're to better the future, we've got to disturb the present." And that's actually a part of what my messaging to you is, hey, in one sense, you know, we're all kind of just, I don't know, we're all kind of fat and happy with the systems we have now. We're familiar with them, we've been using them for years. Something goes wrong, we're comfortable troubleshooting it. And I'm saying that if we, well, actually got a slide coming up that'll speak to that a bit more. If you're the same person with regard to your skill set 6 or 12 months from now, honestly, you're falling behind. And I think in your mind you know that, but it's good to point it out now and then. Technology is constantly changing. It is changing all the time. And one of my heroes, or a life coach that I like to listen to now and then, is a guy named Dennis Waitley. Have any of you ever heard of Dennis Waitley before? No hands? Oh, wait, one? Okay. He wrote a number of best-selling books, so that's good. But I like to take this quote seriously. The real risk is doing nothing. That's our real risk. And as you approach an age like me, hey, maybe I'm 5, 6, 7, 8 years away from retiring. You know, sure, you could just coast. And a lot of folks do that. And part of me says, no, you can't do that. And part of me says, oh, man, you know so much. You just don't have to learn more now, do you? But the real risk is doing nothing. So at Telos Alliance, we've been asking this question for a lot of years. What if? We've been asking this for 40 years. Steve Church started asking, what if I put digital signal processing in a telephone hybrid? And you know the story from there. Specifically, what if audio consoles and our on-air phone systems and our audio processing and broadcast intercoms could be installed in minutes, not days, controlled from anywhere, controlled from any device with a browser, and deployed on-premise or in the cloud and have automated redundancy? So today we're kind of asking not only what if, but what now? What are we ready to do now? Can we do some of these things now? Does it make sense to do all of these things now? And I should point out that what we actually can do now to move our facilities forward to a place where, quite frankly, we kind of know we're going here anyway. I mean, if, for example, let's imagine that you and some partners started a local bank, and you got investors together, you started a bank, but you kind of didn't really have a strategy for online banking or ATMs. How popular would you really be? Now, once in a while I like the human contact of actually going into my bank, but except for going to a soccer match with my banker, they invited me to go, I haven't been in the bank in probably close to a year. And during COVID, how many of us went to the bank? But how many of us deposit a check by taking a picture of it and doing other online banking things? We know we're going to this place where we won't have so much equipment bolted into a rack. We know we're going there. So let's go ahead and be on our way. Let me introduce you to our couple of subject matter experts who are going to help me and you by authoritatively describing and demonstrating the key concepts we have here. And the actual operation of containerized broadcast systems. Martin Deister here, he's the VP of Business Development at Telos, but his expertise is in intercom systems for TV broadcasters. He has a lot of operational knowledge of intercoms, and that leads, frankly, some innovations in today's matrix-free, IP-based intercom systems. And Brian Jones, some of you may have talked to Brian Jones. Whenever I can't figure something out, I give Brian a call because I know he'll have the answer. Brian's a leading support and tech specialist in the field of audio over IP systems, especially in dynamic routing and signaling. He's super good at that. His work, even today, even right now, actually plays a key role in the most complex operations at radio stations and radio networks around the world. Brian has done some amazing work at some of the big radio networks. I wish I had time to tell the story. I don't. But there was a weekend a few years ago when an IP circuit went down between a network headquarters and the satellite uplink. For a whole weekend, every single NFL football game on the radio went through Brian Jones' bedroom because he had a couple of iPorts, because he could get the audio from the one and send it to the other, even though those two, he was the third leg of the triangle that the hypotenuse wasn't working. So anyway, yeah, Brian's pretty cool. Two or more individuals who are developing and installing this technology. Greg Shea is our Chief Technology Officer at Telos Alliance. He co-developed audio over IP for broadcast with both LiveWire and with AES67. He holds a patent on the clocking techniques that make low latency AOIP actually work. And Sean Dolan is a partner at Inrush Broadcast Services. Inrush provides turnkey project management, solutions consulting, and outsourced engineering support to big media creators and networks and so forth. So he really is a guy on the ground getting these things to work. So for quite a while now, we've been exposing the possibility of replacing purpose-built broadcast equipment with general-purpose computer servers running software. And the software can be run in virtual machines or, more recently, as containerized software. We're able to deploy any number of, you know, broadcast system functions and do it on premises or in data centers. And it's being deployed and managed using really standard IT industry tools, not stuff that we've come up specifically for broadcast, but we borrow from the IT industry, kind of like we used to borrow from the telephone industry. And this lets broadcast engineers draw on a huge amount of expertise and standards and, you know, other software that just kind of works. I'll show you one here in a few minutes. The term virtual can imply a lot of different things, depending on the context. At its base, I looked it up last night actually, the word virtual actually means almost or nearly as described. So we'll get into the computer and IT meanings in just a minute, but let's take a moment to hear from Greg Shea about his MG Midget that doesn't have an MG engine. Here's Greg Shea. Greg, you're driving a car that's an MG Midget, but it's not quite an MG Midget. What's going on?
That's right. I may be one of the few people in the world that has an electric midget. It's not factory. It's a project that I worked on for about 5 years. And it's really cool. No gas, step on the accelerator pedal, and off I go.
You could make the argument that you have virtualized the gasoline engine that the car originally came with.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, because in a sense, it's still an engine. It's still a motor. It has to get me where I'm going. It just does it in a different way. And it does it in a way that the original designers of the car didn't expect, which is one way of looking at a virtualized computer or a virtualized server. It's still a computer. It's still a server. It's still doing the same work, but it's doing it in a more controllable, transportable way that acts like a computer, but is virtual inside the server.
So say with me, at the end of the presentation, we're going to see some under the hood pictures of Greg's MG Midget, and that's kind of cool.
Here's Greg Shea. Greg,
oops, sorry. So as with virtual machines on a server platform, different software containers can be installed on a single server, giving you multiple broadcast-related functions. So in this example, a Linux operating system is installed on a bare metal computer hardware. And then within Linux, we're going to install a container runtime engine like the Docker engine. And this is going to service and support the broadcast applications that we install in the containers. Now, these apps are typically containerized audio consoles, phone systems, intercom systems, and other functions like audio processing, profanity delay, and some audio processing as well. So just get that in your mind. You can run different functions, you know, in the same place. We could argue that radio broadcasters have actually been virtualizing since the early 1990s, again, depending on your definition of virtualizing. That's when the first PC-based automation playout systems were installed and used on air. Remember when we got our first playout systems, but we kept some cart machines in the control room, you know, just in case the PC locked up? Well, in this presentation, we'll be seeing and hearing virtualization in a more modern context, and that is virtualizing the very computing platforms that these are run in. So we're talking about virtual machines and containerized software. Such systems represent the current technology, especially in terms of remote management and failover capability and redundancy. Now, remember, containerized software, because of audio over IP and because of networking, that software can interact with other software containers, and it can also interact with hardware. So beware that, you know, they're talking the same language. And so these things can talk to each other on the same LAN or even over a WAN if the software containers are up in the cloud somewhere. So in this example, we see broadcast hardware and containerized software operating the same physical plant. Let's consider what audio over IP does for us. If you're using AOIP, you know the technology is valuable for several reasons. The pristine audio quality that it conveys, the convenience it offers to us engineers, and the variety of sources and destinations that AOIP can tie together. Greg asks a little bit different question, though, and I'd never heard this before until I interviewed him on Friday, and this is what he said about this.
What is the most valuable thing that audio over IP connects to? And I answer that as software. So once we took our audio on into the standard networking formats, it could then go into standard servers and could be accessed and produced by only software. When we got rid of the sound cards, we weren't just getting rid of the sound cards and the cables. We were allowing ourselves to get completely into the software platform and the software economy, and this is a facet of that now. You may have a complete AXIA or AES-67 standard audio over IP studio. Now you can drop in these virtualized studios along with that, and it can connect and talk to everything. So we actually set the foundation with the audio over IP connectivity. Now we can go the next level and start doing different things, replacing some of that hardware with software.
Well, just like yourself, Sean Dolan has been to his share of presentations, like this one, where the speaker is talking about the benefits of virtualized broadcast functions and systems. Well, now that Sean has himself installed dozens, maybe close to 100, of such systems at radio and TV stations, he's come to clearly see even more of the benefit that we've been talking about. And he has a little bit different angle on this than I'd heard before.
The main evidence for it, you don't really even have to look very hard, is the drive among companies in all industries to have software-based architectures as their core components, right? There's definitely a drive to move to the cloud, and the that would not exist if the economics weren't there for it, right? So as a broadcast engineer, it's really nice to be able to go to management and to essentially be on board with some of the initiatives that they're proposing, which is often cloud-based or centralized computing architectures. So I really don't believe it's a flash in the pan. The architecture of containers has been growing in popularity far before broadcast ever really got in the game. And I think also the number of manufacturers and software publishers now really kind of coalescing around this containerized software architecture for broadcast applications, I think is evidence as well that it makes sense for a lot of customers, to the point where it's really gained this sort of critical mass and gained enough respect to be seen as a serious trend in not just broadcast, but in the technology industry overall.
So what's it like? What's it like for on-air talent to actually use a broadcast phone system when that system is running as containerized software? What does it feel like? And what if that software container is in a data center or public cloud? Is that any different? Let me get to the right clip here then. There we go.
Talent have been getting more and more used to not seeing the phone system, and hopefully not thinking about the phone system, especially with systems like VX, where the engine sort of hides in the background. But from a user perspective, the experience, if you want it to, of using something like VXS can be nearly identical, if not completely identical, to using a hardware-based VX. Some folks do like that, right? They still want to use their VSETs. They want to use the same call screening software. They want to be able to punch a button on the console and have the call go on the air. And that can all be done. Given that these are all just network connections, folks like my company are able to help decide what kind of network connections to use, how to handle network address translation, and tunnel into the public cloud environment, for example. But ultimately, that, to the talent, is all transparent. All they know is that they can, just like before, pick up the phone and talk to their, talk to their listeners, and they have no idea that this phone system is actually a number of other components kind of working together and running in the public cloud. From the engineering perspective, it can be really nice because instead of having all these discrete hardware boxes across all your facilities, which, from a deployment speed standpoint could be a problem, from a local setup standpoint can be a problem. But if you could imagine, instead of having, if you have 50 markets, right, instead of having 50 VXs in the racks in all those places, you have potentially, if you'd like, one VXS running in the cloud that can run all of those markets and be redundant with a backup instance waiting in the wings. But instead of, you want to add a new market, you want to add a new station, you want to make a change, you have one point where you need to go. And you add your studios and you add your shows add your phone numbers, and suddenly you've built phones for an entire new radio station, just like the last 49 stations, with a few clicks of a button and a few minutes of your time. And because the networking is obviously so crucial to this, if you can standardize that across your facilities, then this doesn't become very hard. The first time, second time, third time might be interesting to work out some of the kinks and work out some of the details of how the networking is being done. But past that, you're replicating over and over, and you've built this really sustainable system where you can deploy basically an entire phone system for an entire market, in a matter of less than a couple hours, and most of that's working with the provider of the phone numbers to spin them up and actually get audio across the network to your console and usable by your talent, just like they use their old phone system.
I'm going to have to tell Sean that his voice resonates real well with this room. Sean just talked about deploying a containerized software talk show system in a cloud environment. His main example was from a rather large Telos VXS system that serves a number of studios in each of several markets. And that brings up the question again, what factors go into a decision on where to place your virtualized infrastructure, on premises or in a data center?
If all of your other sources and all of your destinations where you're connecting audio to are all local on your premises, then there's arguably not much of an advantage of like taking the heart of the studio up to the cloud, because you have so many connections you have to make back and forth. But the trend that we're seeing is the playout system tends to be in the cloud. Your remote feeds are coming remotely, so they're already on the networks. The things that you're delivering to, if it's the streaming outputs, those are on the cloud, so in the internet. So the point is, if you look at your whole operation and you realize really the only connections that you have from your premises are your host microphone and monitoring headphones, then this is when it makes really sense for the heart of the studio to be where everything else is.
So many broadcasters ask, can I have call screeners or show producers or even my talk show talent working from home? How can I make that work when my on-air phone system is running in a software container, either at the studio or in the cloud? Well, on the one hand, the Telos VX family, including the VXS containerized system, frankly is a little complex in its networking operation. The complexity was necessary in designing a fast-paced, fast-acting talk show system that offers the best audio quality possible. On the other hand, a very common IT technique, virtual private networking, VPN, simplifies the complex into something that works well without losing any benefits of the VX design. So Sean Dolan explains how they're setting up and the techniques that they're using to get people at home to have full functionality of call screening and on-air talk.
You know, most broadcasters at this point have a VPN setup of some kind, and if they're folks who kind of work in the cloud space as well, or cloud data center, whatever it is, that VPN typically can grant the talent access to whatever you want to give them access to, right? So if you want to give them access to your, say, VXS instance running in a data center or in your public cloud, you've already got those paths set up. It's just a matter of making sure that the users are authenticated to access those devices. Past that, with some VPN magic, for example, there's really no difference between being on the local network, on a studio computer, plugged in, running your call screening software, and being at home, save for perhaps some number of miles and a few more hops around the network. So that can be really advantageous, because you can then screen calls just like you were in the studio, but from home. And especially if you have a small mixer at home, as many folks do at this point, post the lockdowns, a lot of these kits are still deployed in the field. you can either bring your colors up on a fader, you can mix them into your audio editing software, whatever that might be, and essentially take callers and cut the calls down, do contesting, whatever, either live or pre-recorded, just like you would at the studio. So it's pretty incredible, the flexibility that it gives you.
In the interest of time, I'm going to skip a slide.
Yeah, you're certainly not losing.
Because he pretty well said that. All right. When the COVID lockdowns were announced and enforced, it put a huge strain on the practice of live video production. And while sporting events were canceled for a while and studio audience programs went into reruns, we still had to produce local and national news programs. Just enough video production solutions were coming online at that time, but a much-needed intercom system, that was lacking, one that deployed easily into the homes and such. So most existing intercom systems were designed to work solely on premises and weren't so friendly to a distributed workforce. So my colleague Martin Deister picks up the initial story from there.
Many of the products were already out there for helping people produce video and to an extent audio, but communications is kind of lacking. So we at Telos, particularly in the development team, looked at the hardware product that we'd built, given, as I said before, that it's Matrix 3 product. And we looked at this device and decided, well, is there anything we can do to make this a software version of the same product using the same basic architecture of a distributed model using DSP? And the R&D team quickly came across a technique called containerization, software containerization. And they worked out that they could actually kind of suck the software out of the hardware panel and redeploy it as a software version using Docker containers. So if you think about it in intercom terms, in a Matrix 3 intercom system as we have with Infinity and with VIP, each panel exists in its own right. Each panel connected to a network is part of the architecture that forms a wider intercom system. So with VIP, the way it works, let's say you need a 16-panel intercom system. You deploy 16 Docker containers on a server, something like an AWS EC2 platform, or on an on-prem bare metal server, or in Google Cloud or Azure, or whatever your cloud provider is that you use. And those containers running on that virtual machine connect using an AS67 virtual LAN, a VLAN, and they communicate in exactly the same way. And the way we get those panels to people is each of those panels appear in your browser. They use your browser's own audio connections, so it might be a USB headset, could be a Bluetooth headset, could be just you talking into your phone, but you have a fully featured intercom panel right there in front of you.
So let's see how a software container IP intercom works with its various components, both in a cloud environment but connected to hardware at an existing production facility and with software browsers for the talent in the field.
What this diagram shows us is the architecture of a system that's running in the cloud. So when you deploy a VIP system, you load the software onto a server. And in this diagram, it's on AWS. So what that represents there, highlighted by that red circle, is a VIP server running in the cloud with a number of panels running. It's controlled by the dashboard management software, which is shown down in the bottom left-hand corner. And anybody who has a computer that can browse to the server can have access to dashboard and configure the software. And then the panel instances themselves, however many panels you want, those are viewed on devices with browsers. And you can see there's a computer, a tablet, a phone, and also a user home who might be down the bottom right using other video production services as part of their role, also has access to a VIP panel. And on that image, the panel user is using a Stream Deck to remote control the panel so that they can have hardware control as well. So we've done that. We've implemented Stream Deck control. The connectivity to other elements of a production system, should they exist, an intercom system is nothing without four wires. Panels are great, but unless you can get mixed minuses in to feed IFBs and hear program, talk to the camera operators and other people who might not have a panel in front of them, you need to do that somehow. And so what we've implemented is a product called Infinity Link. Infinity Link runs on the server as another container, and Infinity Link can support Opus or NDI connectivity. So those four wires can connect to anything running Opus or anything running NDI. So that might be Grass Valley Amp, which supports both Opus and NDI. It could be VizRT, which supports NDI. It could be Sienna product supporting NDI. The Waves console, I believe, supports Opus and NDI, and the Harrison VBM virtual console. There's many things out there in the cloud space now used for production that supports one or other of those codecs that enables us to connect to those services into the Infinity system. And then if it is run on-premise services, so that could be an existing third-party hardware intercom system, as highlighted there. There's an RTS Atom shown on there and some other components, a mixing console. And you can use a hardware Infinity Link gateway to connect up to the cloud instance as well. And that can be a conduit to carry Opus, or you may have an NDI server and NDI components to be able to make that connection.
So Martin and I were chatting, and I mentioned that we should have a look at the configuration procedure and then try this out between us. After all, we are in the communication business, so let's see how that
works. That sounds like a good opportunity, I guess, to maybe have a look at a panel or two and how we get panels in front of people.
Then that would be with the dashboard software, right?
Yeah, so this is the dashboard software. And one of the beauties of dashboard software is made it really easy to program. So what we're looking at here, without spending a whole load of time, is the entire Infinity system, this VIP system, divided up into quarters, where the top left shows us the icons of the panels. And this system has 10 panels on it of different sizes. This MCR2 panel is a 36-key panel, for example. This one called Martin is a panel running on the system, and we have one called Kirk because we prepared this and we're going to talk to each other in a second via the panels, and also other IOs coming in here, you know, some feeds to my office. I've called it Bureau, just, you know, to sound clever than I really am. And then the keys to program the panel are down here. So let's say, you know, this Martin needs to speak to the editor, of course, or no, the graphics. And all I do is drag that down to there, and I've got a key to talk to graphics. So on the top right, these are my four wires are all coming into the system. So some of these are feeds coming in from the outside world over the internet. Some of them are just stuff like hot mics of the panels that are on there. Party lines, groups and stuff like that are all programmed over here. But we need to get these panels to people, and we have a way of doing that called the beacon server. And the beacon server allows me to send a panel to somebody to use. So what I've done previously is I've sent a panel, I've sent a secure link, which I've copied from the beacon server to my browser, and I have a panel open. And before we started recording, I also sent one to Kirk. And Kirk, I think you've got a panel on your phone that you can use.
I do. I took the link you sent me, and I clicked on it. And magically, after I just gave permission to use my microphone, the panel appeared on my phone. So it looks like an intercom panel.
It does look like an intercom panel. And I've got the other end of it here. So I've got a key to talk to Kirk. If I hit that key... Earth to Kirk, coming
Earth
Kirk.
Earth to Kirk, coming Kirk.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I can put us all on the screen at the same time. There we go. All right, so I'm just on my iPhone. It's on my office Wi-Fi here. And your panel. And by the way, the panel that you're looking at is, you are literally browsed into that panel, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is not an app running on your computer.
No.
Also, I should point out that the dashboard software, the dashboard interface you were using before to program the panel that you then gave to me, and the panel you're looking at, that was not an app running on your computer either, was it?
No, that's running in the cloud. This is all running on an EC2 instance somewhere in the US. The reason there was a little delay when I talked to Kirk is that I'm in the UK, Kirk's in Nashville, you know, whatever that is, got to be 5,000 miles or something. So that delay, one, two. Well, that's actually me talking to the server talking to Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
So we're bumping through a stun and turn server, actually, which is deployed in the cloud.
Its usefulness in, obviously, television production, but for radio production as well. I could have this intercom panel going into an IFB earplug in my...
Oop, sorry, hit the wrong button. All right, I'm going to be short on time here, so I'm going to move ahead just a bit.
It's all in the cloud. So
let's try this here. Sorry.
This is a software product called Portainer.
Maybe I should have just stuck with the plan.
It's the same diagram.
All right, this is what I want you to see. This is software containers. One thing you should know, you're probably going to like them so much that before you know it, you're going to have installed quite a few of them. And you got to have some way to manage them, to wrangle them, to keep up with them. And though several different container management systems are available, Martin is going to demo one of them that we like. It's called Portainer.
It's all in the cloud. So we talked about Docker containers, but this is a software product called Portainer. And when we deploy a VIP system, we always deploy Portainer on that system. Portainer is it's a very simple way for people who are not too technically minded, and I'm by no means an AWS cloud practitioner, well, not yet anyway, and it allows me to see what's running on my system. So what you can see here are the containers for the respective panels, panels 1 through 10, in some strange order, but that's the way that Portainer sorts them. The VIP server, which is actually where the codec lives, which allows me to connect using NDI or Opus to on-prem or in cloud 4-wire connections. Portainer itself is running in a container. Dashboard, the configuration software, and finally Beacon, which is how I'd sent the invitations to Kirk and to myself. So all those elements are running as separate containers in the cloud on an AWS instance. And this is also a means that you can use to manage the version numbers that are running on the system.
Well, I'm going to fast forward a bit more here and get to the next topic, and that's audio processing in a container. Of course, audio processing is part of any professional broadcasting or webcasting operation. Content creation, too, needs audio processing. The technical advantage of containerized software are now applying to audio processing as well. This is Paul Kriegler. He's an audio processing specialist, one of my colleagues. He is bringing his decades of experience as a music and a program director to bear on this topic.
Yeah, this is our very first container-based audio processor. This started as a container. I want to make some meters dance here for you so you can see this. This is a new 5-band audio processor from us here at Omnia, and its first iteration is available as a container. The main benefit is high-density deployment. This is really low overhead because it was designed as a container from the ground up. The very first processor of its kind to be developed first as a container, it's extremely low overhead, so you could run a ton of this on one server.
All right, we're going to skip on to this. If you've got a phone handy and you want, if this kind of topic is interesting to you, my employer, TELUS Alliance, has a whole series from start to finish on this. This one's not in there yet. It will be. But you can scan that QR code. It'll take you to the web page where this whole container university is contained. We'll have the QR code at the end of this as well, too, so if you didn't get a chance to get it. All right. If you've ever talked with tech support at TELUS Alliance, maybe you got to speak with Brian Jones. I really wish all support specialists were blessed with his level of knowledge and experience, along with his pleasant bedside manner. The worst thing that Brian has ever said to any customer I know of, when the customer was really frustrating Brian, Brian told him, "You have reached the end of my ability to help you." If he ever tells you that, maybe you're the problem. I don't know. Brian is going to show how live audio mixing can work in containerized software with a new product called Altus.
Yeah, so it's really just a software, or as you mentioned, a containerized version of the consoles that Axia has been building for. How long have we been building Axia consoles? 20 plus years now, I think we're into to Axia consoles. We've taken all the smarts and the engine and the ingest and creation and all of those smart features like the mix minuses and all that stuff, and we've built it into basically software only. You run it in a container. If people aren't, that's a whole nother discussion. But containers just allow you to run things as a piece of software that you might otherwise have had to have a dedicated computer for, or even a dedicated piece of hardware. So this is just it's all the smarts of the physical consoles that people are used to putting their hands on.
So until a few days ago, I personally had not seen or heard what we're about to demonstrate right here, and that is live remote contribution. That's frankly so easy, even a weatherman can do it. That's a little self-deprecating, but let's consider some real convenience using solid technology, doing a live show and doing it remotely.
Yeah, so let's talk just briefly about historics, right? If you'd have done this before, you'd have had to have a Telos Zip 1 or some other vendor. I mean, I don't mind mentioning the name Comrex or Tyline. You'd have had to have somebody's hardware at each end to be able to connect up. And in Altus, we've made that fairly simple, I think, by supporting a relatively common technology called WebRTC, right? So essentially what I do, if I want you to connect to my console, as we've done here, you can see that your fader exists because I created a source profile in my console called Kirk, and its source type is WebRTC. And so I create a WebRTC source, I give it a name, and then I sent you a link and said, hey, Kirk, I want you to come join my session. And when you click that link, you get a web page that opens up where you can decide, hey, what audio do you want to send me? In other words, what's the source of your audio? Is it a microphone? Is it a built-in microphone? Is it a sound card that maybe feeds from another, Mackie mixer or something like that, and then whatever your output is. And when you connect to me, that's our contribution method, right? I don't have to go buy anything. I don't have to purchase any hardware to make this happen. There's a very good chance that you already have, if you have a computer, you probably already have what you need to make this connection work. And it uses WebRTC, and it uses fairly common stun or turn servers. Stun and turn server is responsible for attempting to make the connection between you and me. So in our case, Kirk, I know that my firewall does not allow you to connect to me directly. So the stun server that we're using is trying to set up that connection between you and me. Mm-hmm. And my firewall says, nope, I'm not going to allow that because I don't know who Kirk is. I know who the stun server is, but I don't know who Kirk is. And at that point, Turn comes into play, and Turn is responsible for relaying that connection.
You invited me to be a part of your show.
That's right.
And the first screen I got was, of course, hey, do I have permission to use your microphone or your audio? And I said, sure. Yes. And then it asked me what audio source and destination locally that I should use. I have a USB audio box here, and I'll show you that part. It asked me, hey, what do I use for audio in and out? And yep. I have an audio box Go. It's just a USB device. But then you were talking about stun and turn.
Correct.
And indeed, it looks like I'm connected to you and have been for quite a while here.
Yep.
But I am being relayed through the stun and turn server. Apparently, one of us has a restrictive firewall and says, no, I'm not going to let him in directly.
Or both. It could be.
Or both.
It could very well be both of us.
Yeah.
Right. Suffice to say that you as the end user can manage that however you want. If you want to use that stun and turn server to relay. Mm-hmm. Ideally, the stun and turn server would connect us up directly and then get out of the way. So ideally, firewalls would be allowed to make that WebRTC connection. But A, it's not hard. You just need to make some accommodations. But the most important point is that we're not using any specially purchased don't tell our salespeople, but you don't need to buy Telos Zip 1s if you do this. So
I'd like to point out, can you send me some audio? Oh, yeah, you're sending now. Great.
Yep.
At my end, I don't have to be an engineer to figure this out. You sent me a link. I clicked on it, got asked if it was okay to use my microphone on my computer, and then I got this web page right here. So the white bar is my send audio. It happens to be left channel only because that's the way my and many USB external interface boxes work.
And I then fixed you can, that on the console, by the way. You notice how I've got two channels on the console. It's because I knew that you were sending me left channel.
Yeah, we'll come back to that in a second. But I'm receiving the green bars, the green VU meters, are your audio being sent back to to me.
No accounting for taste and I
here in the here in the real world, I had it muted so you and I could carry on a conversation. Now back to your console. So I'm connected easily. That was so easy to do. And there I am on your fader number 4. Oh, look, I've got both channels because you probably set up my source. You knew I'd be left channel only. And you said, we're going to put them on both channels.
Right. And so that's what I did on his.
Yeah. Very nice. So I'm hearing the program 1 from the console. And I'm able to contribute when you want to let me on. Looks like my fader's on right now. So I'm part of the show. So I'm able to talk and participate. How cool.
Right. Yep, very good.
I want to respect your time, so I am going to buzz forward here. You can see this whole presentation with some better graphics put in when we present Container University 301 from Telos Alliance. I did promise you I'd show you a couple pictures of Greg's car. I think it's pretty fascinating. This is his MG Midget EV. That's Greg and his daughter. That's the virtual engine, right? Because it's not the real engine. Using the word virtual that way, that's the electric motor. And then there is a Chevy Volt control package there, and then the lithium ion batteries in the trunk. He started out with lead acid batteries, but he upgraded to actually Chevy Volt lithium ion batteries at some point. So whether on premises, data center, or public cloud, you know this is where we're going. Not tomorrow, although you can start if you like, but you know, at some point, it's going to be like online banking. You'll be able to do this from anywhere, and you can still go to the radio station and have conversations around a table. By the way, if you haven't seen it, I want to put in a little plug for my friends at Broadcast Bionics. They've invented a thing called the Bionic Table, where you sit down, you got a microphone and headphones, and that's pretty much it. You're dealing face to face with real people, and the mixing goes on a tablet or something really easy. It's quite nice technology. If you wanted that QR code to look at what we've done so far in terms of Container University, Greg goes into depth on how to keep all this stuff clocked and timed, how to make decisions about local or in the cloud, what are the trade-offs there. Whole good series on and security. How do you get your people in securely? And or not. And we've got a security expert to talk to us about that on one of those shows. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. I'll be around to answer some questions. And it's good to see you. Good to all be back together. Take care.